But the reality of the family as a cell is only the first aspect of this dimension of Christian marriage as a mystery in the mystical body of the Church. The second aspect constitutes a veritable ministry in the Church. Christian husbands and wives are not only a mature cell in the Church, but they must act in the Church. This is not an optional choice, something they can do when and if they feel inclined, but an obligation. The home, an education in the faith. Their first obligation consists in making their home a center of Christian education, a small community of faithful. Too many homes are not sufficiently aware of their responsibilities in this matter. They do not realize that the family is the first church of children and that priests and the public institutions of the church can never replace this elementary ministry with which parents are charged. If the family is not a matrix in which children grow up in the faith after having been engendered, if it is not a living school where the children are not only transmitted certain Christian principles but mature organically by receiving a maternal education in the faith, then everything else is compromised. I think it is largely because of the abdication of families in this education and hence their lack of awareness of the social implications of their sacrament, that we have so many formal Christians in the church, so many Christians who have committed to memory a few fundamental ideas but who never received an education in their faith, who have been baptized but who never grew up with parents who exercised this very fundamental ministry. No priesthood can substitute for the failure of the home because the children find the church in their families before they find it in the parish. They must live the Christian life in the community that is the home. Otherwise they risk not living it at all. The home as center of Christian worship. The second obligation incumbent upon parents is to make their home a center of Christian worship. The church is not simply a place where we manifest our faith in Christ. It is a community in which the rites of the liturgy are exercised and where Christian people gather to pray. The church is a community in prayer. Since the home is the cell of the church and since it shares in the social and public responsibilities of the church, it must promote this spirit of prayer. All the pagan religions had their domestic cult, their god of the home. In Christianity, Christ becomes the Christ of the home, and when the father of the family presides, for example, over evening prayer, the prayer of the little Christian community that is the family, he fulfills a sacerdotal role. Indeed, here he exercises in a privileged manner the royal priesthood of the laity because he is charged with offering to God, in thanksgiving, the life of those confided to his responsibility, of this human community whose chief he is by virtue of his sacrament. The home as a witness. A third obligation of the family consists in making the Christian home a center of testimony to Christ. The church is always a missionary community, a community which is a presence in the world to announce Christ and to manifest Him. Likewise, the Christian family must be in the world as a presence of Christ, a home which bears witness to Christ. It is thus that families will accomplish their great apostolic and missionary responsibility which the sacrament of marriage imposes upon them. The deep love of home life united in Christ constitutes, in the pagan atmosphere of our times especially, a sign of Christ's presence in the world. Because of these three ministries which every home must exercise, Christian marriage is a real entrance into the public life of the church. When we entered the church together to realize the institution of Christian marriage, we become citizens of the church as we never were before. Conjugal love, a sacramental necessity. In terminating, I would like to point out certain exigencies that Christ calls you to live in your consecrated love. The first exigency of Christian marriage is certainly to love. This may appear banal, but its importance cannot be exaggerated. When love is no longer authentic, nothing is left for Christ to consecrate. His Easter no longer has dominion. To love is the first duty, and one scarcely dares speak of duty in this respect, of Christian husbands and wives. Reviving an awareness of mystery. A complementary exigency is to revive an awareness of the mystery that is lived. From time to time we catch a glimpse of the depths of love, but but for the most part our lives are only too external and superficial. This is also true of marriage. There are perhaps many who tell themselves, I have never touched this depth of the sacrament of marriage. I have lived honestly, I have fulfilled my obligations, I have remained faithful, but I have never had this consciousness of being united with Christ in the totality of human reality lived personally and socially. If this is so, then it can only be because they have not constantly renewed the consciousness of the mystery of their love in Christ. Christian couples must look to ways, upon their love for each other and upon Christ who has lifted their love up and subjected it interiorly to His love. We must always be in contact with Christ through faith and at the same time be conscious that His love lives in us. What is most lacking to us is this faith in the Christian reality of marriage. It is not always easy to live thus on the moral plane, to do certain things and avoid others, to live in conformity to a definite ethical status which we have imposed upon ourselves. But it is still much more difficult to live the sacrament of marriage as a sacrament each day and every minute. This demands that we be wide awake, lucid, that we pay attention to what we are living and know that we carry within us a great mystery, that we do not render our love prosaic. It demands that we do not reduce our marriage to simply the greatest human experience, and that we possess this realistic awareness that only faith can give us. In a very certain and profound way, our love no longer belongs to us. We must become deeply convinced that our human love belongs to Christ and to His body, which is the Church. We can never revive an awareness of this mystery in ourselves mechanically. Nothing is more harmful to our spiritual life than lukewarmness and superficiality. The clear-mindedness which couples have on their wedding day and which gives them the courage to overcome the fear they feel and resolve to give themselves to the sacrament of marriage, must continue. The circumstances of conjugal life will often be an occasion to meditate upon the mystery which must animate them, an invitation to return to the sources of their faith. Such a union is indissoluble. The consequence of Christian love lived in conformity to its sacramental reality is clearly that such a union must be indissoluble. Perhaps this is too frequently taken for granted. Here, as everywhere else, we must understand what is indissoluble. It is not only because of the human reality in love. It is true that human love, if it is deep, aspires to endure indefinitely, and there is already a desire of eternity in all true human love. But we know that this love is fragile and subject to sudden changes. This is so true that to found the indissolubility of marriage on the human element of love, however admirable and deep it might be, would be a practical impossibility. Nor is the indissolubility of Christian marriage founded uniquely upon the sociological consequences its dissolution would imply. Too frequently we stress this motive in the hope of being more convincing. Since these are human motives which do not involve faith, we imagine that we will be better understood. But they are insufficient motives for a Christian. It is true that we can prove that the indissolubility of marriage assures greater happiness for the children, although even this isn't always true. We know of many cases where experience has proven this reasoning false. But what experience can never prove false, and what really constitutes the fundamental reason, essentially mystical, for the indissolubility of marriage, is its interior Christian signification. It is really because Christ is one. Just as Christ loves His Church, indissolubly with one love that is never retracted, just as He is faithful to death itself, so too, Christian couples must be, as Christ was, faithful until death, whatever it costs, in spite of the difficulties, the temptations and the daily contingencies of married life. I do not say they must do this to imitate Christ, for imitation remains exterior, but because Christ relives in them His own love of the Church. It is in this sense that we must interpret the text from Saint Paul: just as Christ loved His Church, that He might sanctify it, so too must you love each other. We have no other model of human love than the love of Christ for His Church. The unity that is in Christ dictates the indissolubility of Christian marriage and fidelity unto death. In what we have been saying, you have undoubtedly recognized the life you have been living for some time, and in the measure that you recognized it as an accusation, there is something lacking to your marriage. Love demands the quality of being a veritable gift and not merely sensuality or asceticism. It demands above all faith, and I am afraid that there are many Christian homes where the husband and wife love one another, adequately and quite correctly, but only from a human point of view, with human fidelity, with human honesty. Faith is missing. If such be the case, then some among you must yet be converted to Christ, must begin to really take Christ seriously in order that the seriousness of Christ become the seriousness of your sacrament of marriage. I think that a conversion to Christ, an understanding of the seriousness of our faith, is necessary to those couples who were married, exactly as to those who were baptized. They were baptized in a given sociological milieu, consequently they were married in a given sociological milieu. But between the two, between their baptism and their faith, no conversion took place. There was really no option of Christ, no absolute recognition of his lordship and his power over all human flesh. Their marriage cannot enjoy its full measure of perfection. It is proper, sincere and exteriorly passable, but its soul is missing. Just so, the priest must always return to the initial faith which alone gives meaning to the sacrament of marriage. If Christ is not a living presence, then the sacrament can only be ritualism, an external form, a blessing that we ask to get God on our side. If Christ is not a living presence, then marriage is not that reality which begins one day and ends only with death, that daily reality of the greatest of human experiences, already lived in a dimension of eternity, in union with the Easter of Christ. Synopses and discussion questions. Part I, the height and the depth. Chapter I, the scope of marriage. Synopsis. Our first attitude toward love and marriage ought to be one of understanding. Love cannot be rightly understood as a sentiment or just another activity of man. Nor can marriage be fully defined as a social institution or a mere association of interests. Marriage must be seen as a mature expression of love, as a love that has become conscious of itself in a dedicated form of life. The notions of love and marriage cannot be separated. This consecrated love is the central reality of life. It is the highest vocation of man. Everything in his life ought to converge towards this focal force of love. For only through this force can our personalities crystallize and develop. By centering all of our activities into one total act of offering, love gives unity to our lives. By drawing us into the service of another person who needs us, love traces out our life's mission. Married love not only gives unity and purpose to our lives, it also permits us to transcend ourselves in the interests of another. It completes our lives. This human fulfillment is possible only in marriage. For only in marriage, accepting, of course, the consecrated love of a religious vocation, is that deep exchange of values which elicits the highest human qualities of both man and woman possible. A man is more a man because a woman lends the strength of her love to his work. A woman is more a woman. 183. Greater source of life, of strength and of beauty, when her personality is anchored in that of her husband. The complete human being is the couple. It is also within married love that human fulfillment blends into supernatural fulfillment. For marriage is a sacrament. That is to say, God's grace becomes mysteriously united to human love in such wise that the increase of one affects the increase of the other. Whatever brings a man and wife closer to each other, brings them closer to God. The highest relationship between the sexes is a spiritual one. The union of man and woman in marriage is the symbol of God's union with mankind. When married couples perceive the extent to which they are committed and involved in a spiritual adventure, they can better understand the full scope of their love. They can, first of all, understand that their love gives conscious expression to the blind forces that move the universe,